It's 12:06 in Kodiak. I'm Brian Venwa. It's time for the Midday Report. Alaska Republicans chose Donald Trump over Nikki Haley by an enormous margin in yesterday's party-run election. Trump won about 88% of the Republican contest to Haley's 12%. Trump voters seemed especially enthusiastic at Grace Church in South Anchorage, one of four voting locations in the city. Retiree Jim White was astounded there was any question whom he voted for.
Trump!
You think I'm crazy?
Because everything
that he accomplished was for the nation, for the citizens, and for the world, okay?
While White says he only heard of the election the day before from a friend, then he drove to three places where he's voted in the past in state-run elections, but this was a presidential preference poll run by the party.
People have been trying to vote all day.
Mike Robbins is the vice chair of the Alaska Republican Party and the supervisor of the Grace Church voting site. He says force of habit had many people turning out bright and early, even though voting locations were only open from 3 to 8 p.m.
Yes, they've been going to polling places around the city since about 8 o'clock this morning.
More than 10,000 Republican voters cast ballots across much of Alaska yesterday. The party won't finalize the numbers until next week, but if preliminary results hold, Trump has won all 29 of the delegates Alaska will send to the national convention this summer. Haley has apparently fallen short of the 13% she needed to win any Alaska delegates. Alaska's Super Tuesday vote was only for Republicans. Alaska Democrats will choose their nominee next month. And the rising cost of local emergency dispatch services and how that service is paid for was the priority of a work session between the Kodiak City Council and Kodiak Island Borough Assembly last week. Police Chief Timothy Putney says the Kodiak Police Department handles more than 13,000 emergency phone calls annually, which includes 911 and calls for both of the borough's fire departments. KPD operates and maintains the only dispatch center on the island that all local emergency calls go through. City Manager Mike Dvenge says the costs of operating and maintaining a dispatch center add up.
We both agree that radios are important. They need service. We've got a tower. We've got the upgrades to the system. We have a maintenance agreement. That VHF radio system was over $700,000. And then we have, I think it's a $45,000 annual agreement with Procom.
At the work session, managers from both municipalities said they would create a memorandum of agreement to cover the cost of the shared equipment. Another meeting item focused on the E911 surcharge, which is currently capped at $2 per line each month based on Alaska state statute. That means when a local telephone call is made to 911 on Kodiak Island, the borough collects up to $2 for each calls. In a past agreement, the borough compensated the city for operating and maintaining Kodiak's 911 system based on the money the borough collected from the surcharge. But the cost of providing enhanced 911 services is outpacing the funds coming in from the surcharge. City Manager Twenge says in the last 3 years, the city has provided the E911 service. It has seen around a $2 million deficit.
We've got to come to some terms here of how we're going to fund this system differently, I would say, but it's going to require an increase in the surcharge or a contribution from the borough if we do that, or the city continues to fund the majority of it.
Based on state statute, the municipal bodies can increase the surcharge amount, but Kodiak voters would have to approve that increase through a ballot initiative. Instead, Assemblymember Ryan Sherritt suggested combining all of Kodiak's emergency services into one community plan to help cover the expenses of operating a local dispatch center for the island. He said this would also serve for federal funding opportunities.
I would propose that we actually stand a community communications program together, funded by the residents and augmented by the surcharge that's collected from the tax, both land and mobile tax. The expenses can be easily divided by the population. If there are X number of residents in the city and X number of the borough, then we have a total. Take the total, divide by the residents, and there's your funding mechanism.
The Kodiak City Council and Borough Island Assembly have been discussing this issue for several years. Both municipal managers will look into Sherritt's suggestion further before the next joint work session, likely by the end of March. And the Aleutic Museum in Kodiak recently named its Volunteer of the Year, celebrating two people, Jim and Bonnie Dillard. Both the Dillards are longtime educators on the island. The couple live in Kodiak and were commended in part for handcrafting new traditional drums for an elementary school music class. According to a press release from the museum, the drums were crafted using traditional methods. April Lechtone and counselor, the museum's executive director, thanked the couple for their efforts to keep traditional knowledge alive. She said in the release, quote, "Thanks to the Dillards, students exploring Aleutic music now have appropriate instruments." The drums the Dillards built are being used to teach at Maine Elementary during the school year and will be returned to the museum during summers. The museum is currently under renovation and will reopen its building on Mission Road in May of next year. And Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy is threatening to veto a key bipartisan education bill that would boost state spending on public schools by about $250 million. Dunleavy says he wants lawmakers to address more of his priorities, like teacher retention bonuses, expanding charter school access, and accountability measures. Dunleavy has to sign or veto the bill by March 14, otherwise it becomes law automatically. But there's about a week to go, and Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone is questioning if a deal is on track.
The governor's priorities are getting a hard look in the Senate, but perhaps not the reception Dunleavy was hoping for. The Senate Education Committee dug into the state's charter school system in a lengthy hearing covering districts from Ketchikan to Nome.
There doesn't seem to be a good reason to fix a system that isn't broken.
That's Brandi Hardy. She's the president of Fairbanks School Board, talking about a proposal backed by Dunleavy that would bypass local school boards and allow the State Board of Education to directly authorize new charter schools. Senator Lukey Tobin, an Anchorage Democrat who chairs the Education Committee, says the perspective was illuminating.
Many of the folks who provided testimony reminded us that our education system is not a one-size-fits-all, does not have a one-size-fits-all approach. We really try to provide choice to all of our communities and to our parents, and that there is a high value to local control, particularly in accountability and fiscal responsibility of use of state funds.
But progress is less visible in the House. The House Education Committee has no meetings scheduled for the week and hasn't met since Valentine's Day. And Dunleavy is in D.C. for Biden's State of the Union speech. He's a guest of Republican Arkansas Senator John Boozman. But Representative Dan Sadler, an Eagle River Republican and the House Majority Leader, says there's plenty going on behind the scenes. House and Senate leaders met with Dunleavy on Monday.
There have been conversations between members of the House and Senate and the governor's leadership to try and figure out how we may accommodate those interests. Those are ongoing. There's no results yet.
And Representative Julie Colomb, an Anchorage Republican, says negotiators are working towards common ground.
The mood of the House this year is much different than last year. There's a consensus that we need to address education and the funding of education. So I don't think we're very far apart from the governor and from each other.
But there are some sticking points. At his February 27th news conference announcing the veto threat, Dunleavy suggested there may not be enough money for the education funding increase lawmakers included in the bill. Dunleavy has broad power to reduce or zero out budget items with a line item veto, and Senate President Gary Stevens says that makes it difficult to give much ground.
I'm really concerned that we are being asked to give up a lot without receiving some assurance that the student monies will not be vetoed.
The bipartisan education bill passed with large majorities in the House and Senate, more than enough to meet the two-thirds threshold to override the veto Dunleavy is threatening. But several lawmakers, especially in the House, say it's premature to speculate on whether they have enough for an override. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Wasilla Republican, is the only House majority lawmaker willing to answer the question directly, and her answer is no.
When I came off of the House floor, I said that this wasn't everything that everybody wanted. As a matter of fact, it fell very short from what we were looking at as a majority caucus. So people will have to vote wherever their conscience is.
But even so, Senator Bill Wilkowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says he's optimistic the parties will find common ground.
I think people have been talking in good faith. Everybody wants to get this behind us, I think. And hopefully in the next week, we'll have a definitive answer.
Questions about the negotiations sent to Dunleavy's press office went unanswered by deadline. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And the U.S. Department of Agriculture awarded over $2.5 million in funding to Alaska this year to improve the quality and quantity of locally grown food. The Micro Grants for Food Security program provides up to $10,000 for residents and organizations that participate in small-scale food production. The grants can be used to buy canning supplies, gardening tools, and dip nets. Amanda Swanson is the Alaska Program Coordinator for the USDA. She says it's not a lot of funding, but it packs a big punch. She says the program has helped feed more than 40,000 Alaskans in 2 years.
Small projects can really help, you know, build a lot of food security in a community.
This is the second year of the program. Swanson says Alaska's food security challenges are unique because the state imports about 95% of its food. She says the entire state is considered food insecure, but rural communities are more vulnerable to higher prices and shipping costs. Swanson says many successful projects incorporate an educational component where kids and adults learn to grow and harvest their own food. She pointed to a 2023 project spearheaded by the Rendezvous Senior Day Center in Ketchikan, working with seniors to plant Haida potatoes that fed the community.
They were proud that they contributed to lunches with homegrown vegetables. The Haida potato planting brought a sense of pride to continue Native Alaska history.
Swanson says the USDA grant program can help increase household and community food insecurity over time because purchased items can be used for multiple growing seasons. Applications for the microgrants food security program are open through March 15. On our last story for the Midday Report, for 30 years, Alaska had a small coal export industry, but now the state's only coal loading facility in Seward is being demolished. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports it's likely a permanent end to Alaska's coal exports and one way the global energy transition is hitting home.
At its peak in 2011, Alaska exported 1.1 million tons of coal annually. That's 18 ships worth of coal, which would travel down the Alaska Railroad from the Usabelli coal mine in Healy in the interior, all the way down to the Seward coal terminal. There, it was loaded on boats headed for South Korea, Japan, and Chile. But within 5 years, exports had dropped 95%. Megan Clemens is a spokesperson for the state-owned Alaska Railroad Corporation, which owns the Seward loading dock. She says the railroad and the mine halted coal exports in 2016.
There simply wasn't the global business to justify continuing the operation at that time.
Demand for coal never came back, and so the coal loading equipment on the Seward dock has sat idle for 8 years. Now the railroad has decided to demolish the coal terminal in the hopes that it can find a new use for the dock.
With this equipment out of the way, how can we better use this coal dock facility, this dock in Seward, to bring some additional business through town?
It's hard for me to see any situation where this is not the end of Alaskan coal exports.
That's UAF energy historian Philip White. Coal was never a huge part of Alaska's energy exports, but White says its decline is one example of changes driven by the global energy transition. Nations have committed to reducing their contribution to global warming, which means switching to lower carbon sources of energy. Around the world, coal has been increasingly replaced by natural gas. White says since the 2010s, countries in Asia have imported more liquefied natural gas, or LNG.
That made a big difference in the power sector, where countries like South Korea and Japan burned a lot more LNG rather than coal for electricity generation.
Compared to coal, natural gas releases less carbon into the atmosphere when it's burned, which has led it to be seen as a cleaner option. But it's still a fossil fuel, and new research has raised questions about whether its climate impact is actually lower than coal's. Despite that, demand for natural gas is only growing. White says that's in part because it works well as a backup to renewable energy sources like wind and solar.
We're looking at a transition where LNG is going to continue to play a large role in that, regardless of its carbon emissions.
Even if the state likely won't be exporting any more coal, it still remains a major energy source inside Alaska. A third of electricity in the interior comes from coal. But coal infrastructure in Alaska is aging, and local utilities are eyeing other options, including wind energy and natural gas. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
And I'm Brian Venois. Thanks for listening to the news. We'll be right back with Island Messenger in just a minute.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. on the web at kodiak.org, and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
So-called digital gatekeepers have to make big changes. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute. New European Union rules require some big tech companies designated as digital gatekeepers to make it easier for consumers to use third-party software and services. The rules kick in tonight. Apple is allowing Europeans to download apps outside of its app store. Google is changing certain search results. Labor market conditions held steady last month. The government's tally of job openings essentially stayed the same at just under 9 million, elevated by historical standards. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says continued progress on inflation is not assured, and there's a risk to cutting interest rates too soon. The comments were part of his congressional testimony today. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, March 6th, 2024. Sunrise today was at 7:49 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 6:55 p.m. That makes for 11 hours and 6 minutes of daylight, 5 minutes about exactly more than yesterday. The record high today was 52 degrees in 1943. The record low was negative 6 in 1971. Here in Kodiak, it's fair skies, just about 36 degrees right now. West winds, just 12 miles per hour. This afternoon, supposed to stay mostly sunny. Looking out the window, it's mostly blue out there, just some clouds off in the distance to the north. Northwest winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming light and variable. Tonight, that 20% chance of snow showers after 4 a.m. Increasing clouds with lows in the mid-20s. Could be a cold night. Tomorrow, Thursday, there's chances of snow showers throughout the day with a high up to 37 and a low again down to 26. But Friday could be partly sunny once again. Jumping over to the tides. The high tide this morning was just about 10 a.m. of 8.4 feet. The low tide's going to bottom out this evening at 5:24 of just about 0 feet here in Kodiak. On the west side over in Larsen Bay, that high tide peaked at about 10:42 this morning of 12.8 feet. The low tide's going to bottom out this evening at just before 6 o'clock of 0.6 feet. We're going to take a quick look at some community announcements. There's a community garden meeting where they'll go over bed prepping methods, mulching, tillage, no tillage / digging, seed starting, garden planning, and there'll be a work party and cleanup planning. It'll be at the Touch Tank building on Near Island at the KFRC in the main meeting room. That's Thursday, March 14th from 5 to 6 p.m. For more information, you can contact Ian at ian.zacher@kodiaksoilandwater.org, or you can call 907-486-5574. There's also the March Gladness concert series presented by Isle Bells. Sunday, March 10th at 4 p.m., they'll be playing at the Cannon Marketplace, and Saturday, March 30th at 4 p.m. in the Auditorium Choral Pod. And the Kodiak Area Mentoring Program is offering a community workshop on addiction and recovery. The next session focuses on the cost of recovery and will be held on Saturday, March 9th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. The workshop will provide an overview of addiction and recovery presented by James Price. The workshops will be held at Kodiak Area Mentoring Program next door and upstairs from AT&T. For more information, you can call 907-539-5736 or 907-539-6905. We have Notice of Budget Public Hearings, Mission Lake Tidegate Service Area Board will hold a public hearing on their fiscal year 25 budget on Friday, March 1st. Well, I guess that's passed. A meeting will be held on Thursday, March 7th during the Assembly regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 to hear comments on Ordinance FY 2024-12 and an ordinance about personnel rules and regulations. You can call 907-486-3231 for more information or email clerks@kodiakak.us. Taking a look at the Kodiak Island Borough's public meetings coming up. Today on March 6th at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly and School Board joint work session will be in the School District Conference Room. And tomorrow, Thursday, March 7th at 6:30 p.m., there will be an Assembly regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And with a little bit of snow coming, depending on if there's accumulation, the city asks that you remove all vehicles from the roadside and trash bins from the sidewalk. And that continue to ask, do not shovel snow onto the middle of the street after plowing has occurred. They also ask that people don't park or block Pillar Mountain Gate and to use designated parking areas. If you have questions, you can contact Maintenance Supervisor Steve Wilson at 907-486-8060. We also have a reminder from the Public Works Department to keep water running from a faucet to prevent pipes from freezing. We're having some cold nights dipping into the mid-20s. During cold spells without any snow cover, ground freezes at a lower depth and pipes can easily freeze if they're not running. While weather may fluctuate and get warm, City of Kodiak Public Works asks that the public please continue to keep water running from a faucet even after weather starts to warm up, because the ground will stay frozen for an extended period of time. And that's it for our community announcements. We'll have Spotlight in just a moment.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.